Feeling a bit nervous now, but I'm kind of all right because I know you're not the Israeli military, you're the Palestinian, so I'm kind of feeling all right, you know. But Rukaya said to keep it short, but after travelling all the way from Gloucester, I'm kind of hungry. So can you tell me where the nearest McDonald's is? You know. But yeah, like Osama, most of the guys have given you like, well, their own account, but it's quite a similar account that I experienced. At the start, basically, it all started at 11 o'clock. We saw the ships, one towards the right, one towards the left. You know, we saw the lights on. They must really turn the lights off and stayed in that position. And then from 11 o'clock till 2 o'clock, while we were just, you know, awake and just keep an eye of what's happening, we saw helicopters, we saw one Israeli drone, and, you know, we were kind of relaxed, you know. I think I had the best binoculars on the whole ship, so everyone's like lining up, can I have a look, so if I look, just pass it on. They must really took them now as well. So basically from 11 till 2 o'clock was going around just making sure everything's all right, and then I was really tired, so I went to sleep on the deck, and I woke up at 4 o'clock when everybody was shouting, they're coming. You know, if they didn't shout that loud, I would have still been sleeping when the attack was happening. But so for about 10 minutes, we're just on that middle deck. And then one of our leaders, all the groups had leaders, you know, different parts of the ship. So one of our leaders, Turkish brother, he said, look, go upstairs, because that's when we heard the helicopter approaching. And we heard the tear gas and the poppers. So I went upstairs and I stood by, you know, the middle, just where where all the media used to stay, and the food was where the food used to be served. And that's where I saw Osama and Bulent, who's the IHH chairman, and also Nalan, who's another person on the top from the IHH. And that's when we were there for a few minutes, just, you know, monitoring the situation. And we heard in Turkish, you know, that's the first martyr, first, like, shaheed. So then that happened on the right of the ship, basically where the Israeli helicopter, before even getting onto the ship, was shooting. And that's the same person that Osama was talking about, Chefdet. And basically he was shot in the head, he was just taking a picture. And like I said, they said the first shaheed. So they brought him round, put his body by my feet. You know, we're all in emotion. And then I waited for a stretcher, and then I took the body down with somebody else. My binoculars were still on my chest, you know, hanging down. So I had to quickly take them off and just put them onto the side. And I also had a flashlight on my head, and that was like falling down. So I had to tell her brother, look, take it off. Because obviously if you're carrying a stretcher, it was like really difficult. Took him down to the middle deck, and before we took him to the middle deck, Bulent took his jacket off and took his white shirt off and gave it to somebody else to go and raise the white flag. From what I heard, I think he was shot as well, but I don't know if that is the truth, but that's what we heard later on. And then that's when we took the body down, put it in the middle deck, and, you know, the doctor was trying to resuscitate him, but after such an injury, he lost his life, and then we covered him with a Palestine scarf. And then, basically that's when we were told to surrender, stop resisting, and everybody sit down. But while we were just, you know, running around, seeing what's going on, more bodies were being brought. The woman that lost her husband, she was by her husband, and then other people were just, you know, running around, bringing bodies and just making sure the injured were all right. And then about 6 o'clock, we were basically in control of the Israelis took control of the ship. I was a bit silly, really, because I was sitting at the back, at the front of the ship, and then because my luggage was at the back, I went to the back and sat at the back, thinking that, okay, I got away with it because I'm not at the front. But the Israelis, they called us from the back of the ship. So I was like the fifth one after the injured to be called by the Israelis, and they said they're going to call the injured and the old. So when they called me, I thought, okay, something's not right here, because I was actually staring at the Israeli soldiers and they couldn't stare back in my face. I was actually staring at them and they couldn't stare back. And then I saw one of the ones that the Israeli soldier that got injured, that was, you know, when we were resisted, he was injured and he had a broken arm and he had bruising all over his face. And, you know, they basically put him in the window to show us, look, this is what you done to us, so watch what we're going to do to you. So there was a lot, you know, they were playing games with us. And I had my IHH jacket on, Quran, mobile phone, camera, and passport, and tried to play it clever again. He calls me over and he goes, come, you with a big beard, yeah. And then, so I said, look, let me just get my passport, even though it's on me. So I went to my bag, which was about 10 metres, just to like that area there. And I said, I'm just going to get my passport. Took my jacket off and just carried my passport, not knowing in the end that they'd have kept all our luggage and everything, because I knew that, like, some of the guys, they got their phone and just threw it into the water. So, you know, I didn't want that to happen. But obviously now I realise we're not going to get no luggage back. And then basically from 6 o'clock that morning till 7 o'clock the following morning, I was on the ship. For 18 hours, I didn't go to the toilet. I was gagged at the back, still got some scars from the when they tied us with cable ties. If you put your hand like that, they're just gonna tie the cable tie right there, so you can't even move it. But you know, I kind of knew what I was doing, so what I done, I just don't put my hand like that, and you got a bit of gap there. So all you do with that is you move the cable tie down, and you can move your hand out. So you know, experience now. I'm telling you, before the next. So before the next flotilla goes, start practicing, you know. Go to your local mechanics and tell him you want some cable ties. So I could get out of it, but obviously that was the start of our, torture. So I didn't want to get out of it straight away. And some of the Israeli military that were, when we were on the deck, kneeled on the floor, they were like, kept looking at me, because I kept fidgeting, and it was a bit fidgety. And guess who was sitting next to me? Kevin. Kevin from Viva Palestine. And, you know, we had a laugh, we were talking, and, you know, there was women there was old people there. So, you know, we were all in the kind of, well, we were in the same boat, wasn't it? But, I'm trying not to be funny here, because it's not about being funny, isn't it? But there was, you know, we saw some people where they were blindfolded. One of the lads, I think he was from Belgium, Jordan, he was blindfolded and he was suffering from asthma. And he was having an actual asthma attack and they weren't even helping him. But after about 10 minutes of him, like, trying, nearly passing out, they took him downstairs and helped him. So, like I said, till 7 the following morning, I was on the boat. The previous evening, about 6 o'clock, when we reached the port, they said, you're all going to come off within two hours, you know, groups. But obviously, from 6 o'clock till 7 o'clock the following morning, more than 12 hours. And then they took us into the prison, took us into the tents that they made specially for us, made us sign the forms, but obviously we all agreed, don't sign the forms. The only one we did sign was to leave within 72 hours. So I said to her, look, if there's a flight in about 12 hours, do you think, you know, you can like let us catch it? And she's like, nah, you got to go to prison first. And I'm like, okay, here's the test. In the prison, I was with Jamal and who was I with? I was with Jamal and another brother, British brother. And most of them were Turkish and one Macedonian, one German. And just like Jamal said, everybody else was met by their consulates. And the Macedonian consulate, they came at 7 in the morning, and because everybody was asleep and the Israelis wouldn't let them in, they came back at 4 in the afternoon. So, you know, this tells you what other countries are like to their nationals. You know, whatever their religion or whatever, you know, whatever they are, they'll wait around just to make sure that person is safe, you know. So, you know, in my life, I've never supported England football team. I've never, because one, there's no Asian players in there. And you know, if you go around London and all the cities in England, I'm sure you'll find some good Asian players there. So obviously there's something wrong there. And then I've never supported the England cricket team. Basically, I've never supported England. That's why I tell you why, because they don't even care about us. They don't come to see us. So that basically tells you why. You know. But, you know. And so then went into the prison, spent good 24 hours there. That one night, obviously, without the visit, me and the brother were just wondering, you know, we're about to just get ready to stay here for a good time because no one's coming to see us. And then the next morning, the actual person who was in, on guard of our prison, he was kind of all right, you know. I kind of like got talking to him, and he was all right. He kind of like looked after us, and I said to him, "Look, what's happening?" You know, and he's like, and then he let us out, he let me out of the prison cell, and he let me just have some free time and just let me just relax. And then about 11 o'clock, we were taken into the other cell where everybody else was, because basically they said, "Look, now you're gonna all go, you know, you're all gonna go." And then they called Jamal into the interrogation room, and like Jamal said, he didn't say anything. But Jamal told me after, they asked him if I was a member of Al-Qaeda. So, you know how they just judge you just by look, by what you look like, you know. And so then they interrogated me for 1 hour, asking me everything from, you know, what's your job at home, to what do you do in your spare time, to, you know, where did you get the money from, who did you give the who gave you the money, where's the money, how did you advertise your, you know, fundraising, you know, every question, you know, even what kind of underwear you were wearing. But I was kind of playing with the guy who was interrogating me, because he's basically asking questions, and I'm like a naughty boy, just saying, you know, what do you want, you know. And he goes, "What football team do you support?" And I goes, "Liverpool." And he's like, "Oh, they didn't have a good season." But I didn't want to continue his conversation. I was just telling him, "Look, I'm not here to talk about whatever. I just want to go, you know." And he started becoming abusive, banging the table, making me stand up, put my hands on the table. And he's like, "Look, what, you know, can you see them scars on your hands?" I said, "Yeah." And he goes, "You know what? This is not the end of your, you know, whatever's going on." So I was a bit, you know, a bit scared, but, well, not scared, but just, you know, how, you know, if you're being interrogated by an Israeli and you look out the window and all you see is a big wall with security wires and everything, you know, what hope do you have, you know? So I was a bit like, okay, what's he going to do next? But then his head, he must have saw that, you know, he's not getting anywhere, so he just said, "Look, just go. You don't get nowhere." But before I left, he goes to me, "Watch out for your life, you know?" So this is what they do to try and, like, they try and break you. You know, this is what they do to try and break you, to make you think of, you know, what has happened and everything. And then we left the prison, went to the airport. I managed to get off the last bus because they were doing like a register saying, you know, 111. But they called my name and then they stopped that system. So I managed to get off that bus. I went into the airport, went through all the checks and everything. They stamped my passport and then got onto the bus, ready to go onto the plane, the Turkish plane. But then they called me back in, into the airport, you know, where all the military and everything is. So I was like, okay, now, why have they called me back in? You know, something's not right. So the guy that called me back in, he pointed upstairs, you know, just like upstairs there. And the guy that interrogated me, he was there waiting, and he smiled at me, just to make me remember him. And like I said, this is how they play their games, you know, this is how they play. And I really wanted to say something, but if I did say something, they would have most probably just took me back in, and, you know, I would have known what would happen. So obviously just stayed calm and got onto the bus. But that's like kind of most of the story. But I just wanted to say, like, thank you to, like, they're not here obviously now, but to the co-captain of the Daphne, which was the IHH cargo ship, who took care of myself and Bilal, who was speaking earlier, for the 3 days we were stayed in Turkey. You know, the first thing they did for us was they took us to a shopping centre, top of the range shopping centre, and they bought some clothes for us. You know, we were like, "Look, we don't, you know what I mean, we're managed, you know," and they're like, no, we have to, you're our guest. And any couple, like the girl, she was not on the convoy, she was just working. And her husband was the co-captain. Any like couple would want to spend time with each other once they come back, once husband or wife comes back from a trip. So for them to, like, you know, take the time out for me and Bilal and look after us for 3 days, honestly, it's, you don't know how to thank them. Thank you. We were so tired, like, from the basic experience and those few days. But the Turkish couple said, "Look, we got a speech for you guys, you know, in a little community, basically his family." And we were so tired, and obviously that was on Saturday night, and Sunday morning we flew, so we were like, you know, we had to do it obviously for them. And went through our story and just told them what had happened. And at the end of the at the end of the program, the community gave myself 500 Turkish liras, that's about £250. And also to Bilal, same. And do you know what I mean? Like where I live in Gloucester, there's about, you know, there's about only a few people who actually stand up for Palestine. And it's, when I see all of you guys and the people in Turkey, honestly, it's amazing. Honestly, it's amazing. One last thing, because I know we're running out of time and I'm still hungry. We're on this stage now because we went on this flotilla. You know, yeah, we can't call ourselves heroes because look at the Palestinians. They're going through this every day, you know. Even before I was born, this thing was happening. So for me to be involved in this thing for like 4 years, I don't deserve to be called a hero. And then when you get people like, you know, George Galloway and other people in the crowd, you know, I don't know you, but who have been campaigning for 20, 30 years, you should be on the stage.